We're going to talk about Yala Esports now. You remember when all of those oil-producing nations came into esports and they were going to lead us into this new sustainable era and we were going to be able to just have huge tournaments with huge prize pools forever and ever and ever, and that was the future. And so, okay, cool, I guess. That's just how we're living now. We've got the Saudi taking over all of the big ones, but we've got other stuff. We've got the Qataris, the Emiratis, they're all coming in, and Yala Esports was one of these projects that was founded, believe it or not, even though we didn't really hear a lot about them in Counter-Strike back then. They were founded back in 2016, and the move was to take money from, I believe, the United Arab Emirates and essentially build a big esports tournament system, which manifested as Yala Compass. And a lot of people were kind of dubious about Yala Compass, but at the end of the day, how can it go wrong? They've got all that oil money. That's what people said. So let's check in with them, shall we? Let's see how they're doing. I imagine things are going well. Huh. Dear Counter-Strike community, the Yala Compass journey has come to an end. Thanks to each and every one of you who supported us. And quite critically, there will be no replies. There will be no replies. Why will there be no replies? Well, you know, people might start talking about all the money that you owe them. And so, okay, I'll just put this here. I was working on this story, and then when I realized Mira had got hold of it, I was like, well, I can put that one. Because there's also been some layoffs at G2, I'm told. There's also something called Baze Esports, which were an analytics company that worked with ESL. They've just gone bust, apparently, as well. It's a real, it's like the second run of the esports winter is happening right now. So I've been piling up on the journalistic side just all these stories about all these companies that are essentially going bust. Not to mention, of course, I did just do about the ESL Face It Group layoffs as well, didn't I? So that's where we're at, right? So I'm glad Mira went out and got a fucking really, really solid piece of reporting done about this. He's killed it. He did a far better job than I would do because, again, I'm so bored of this. Right, there's no way Yala Compass, with access to the money that they had, there's no way they should have, there's no way they shouldn't be paying people. But lo and behold, that's where we're at. Now, just to give you a little bit of context, this is the guy that founded it all, right? Klaus Kajetski, right? Which he's got the word jet ski in his name, which feels like a lie. But it must be true. And he's a dude who, if you look at his LinkedIn page, he was the founder of Yala Esports in 2016. He moved to Dubai, but he worked on some other stuff. He describes himself as a serial entrepreneur. His companies include Poker Travel Agency, where he says he was the founder and CEO. He was the co-founder of Heavyweight DJs, and then in brackets, parentheses, Boris Jetski. Then he was a managing partner at Fashion E-Commerce. And he was doing all of that until 2018, when he became a director of Fandom Esports Media Group. Sorry, Fandom Sports, I should say. Not Esports, Fandom Sports. And what are they doing? It's not really clear. You look at what it says about them on LinkedIn, it appears to be an app of some sort, but it's got about 2,400 followers on Twitter, and they haven't posted anything since 2019. I don't even know what happened there. So if I was to give an assessment of this guy's suitability to run an esports company, I'd say it was low. I'd also say, when you look at a LinkedIn profile like that, that is the ultimate LinkedIn profile. That is just every single esports LinkedIn wanker. So they've got a bunch of jobs and titles at companies that you don't even seem to be in existence anymore, or that you can't fucking find online anymore. And somehow they are now an esports expert. But he wasn't just interested in esports, to his credit. He also appears to be talking about Web3 and crypto. So good for him. Important to know. So, and I urge you to give this article a click. I had the pleasure to work with Mira DeSerto. And you can see right away, It is how Yala Esports collapsed. Over $1 million in debt. Founded in 2016 as a competitive organization, Yala pivoted to operating as a media agency, which had become a key component of the business during the pandemic at the start of 2023. In October that year, Yala announced a new Counter-Strike tournament series called Compass, with a first LAN event scheduled for June 2024 with $400,000 in prize money. It was the Mongols that emerged victorious from that event after beating Ninjas in Pyjamas in the final in front of a small crowd at the Space 42 Arena. Arena in Abu Dhabi. I'm sure you remember this final because obviously this is the one where everyone was going, wow, Mongols have just won an S-tier event. Remember that? Remember when everyone was doing that circle jerk? And there was some of us were going, there was like three good teams here. It was not an S-tier event, not in any stretch of the imagination. No, it's an S-tier event. Don't you remember? Mongols won it, and I love Mongols. Oh, they're so cute and fucking, they're such nice guys, and they come from Mongolia. So, you know, that's like literally how Reddit operates. So it's an S-tier event now. And people were doing the tweets where they were saying that the first Asian team to win an S-tier event in, you know, since We Made Fox or whatever at 1.6. And everyone was just like, guys, this narrative is fucking whack. But anyway, that was the one that they won. And it was their, at that point in time, it was their biggest winning for prize money until they went to Thunderpick in Berlin and won that. From the outside, it felt like another chapter in the Middle East's growing influence in esports, best exemplified by the Esports World Cup, which that year boasted a record $62.5 million prize purse. Yala increased its presence on the Counter-Strike circuit in 2025 by establishing a year-round tournament series culminating in two LAN events offering a total of $1.5 million in prize money. But only a few weeks into 2025, Yala's first tournament of the year, Yala Compass Winter, it lost its ranked status after HLTV revealed that the company was not complying with Valve's new rules regarding invites and tournament stages. And again, you remember we did a stream about that. We got a video about that. There was these ones. It was like Sky Esports and Yala were just not complying with Valve's rules. And they were like, well, can we still do the tournament anyway and still have the VRS points? And Valve were like, nah, not really. Like the rules are kind of the point. And then came April when Yala had to move the Compass event, Kata, to an online event in response to unexpected scheduling constraints as it clashed with the MRQs for the Blast TV Austin Major. Additionally, it also halved the prize pool to $300,000. So lots of red flags, right? I mean, you know, lots of red flags. I don't know why they thought they were going to be able to run a tournament at any point. You'll understand why I feel that way in a minute. Because while this was happening, they still hadn't paid out the money from the one Mongols won. So for context, in case you don't know, in the dark old days of esports, right, how it used to work was we used to operate on this rob Peter to pay Paul model. And what that means is the tournament organizers used to run the event and they'd had no money to pay for the event. And they would use the sponsor money to pay for the event. And then there would be nothing left for the prizes. And so what they would do is they would then have to run another event to get more sponsor money, and then they would use that sponsor money to retroactively pay the people that won the previous tournament, and then the people in this tournament that won this tournament, they would get told, we'll pay you in a month, and then a month was 3 months. And then what would happen in that 3 months is they would run another tournament, and they would take the prize money from that tournament to pay these people. I remember way back when, this is probably 2012, be there or thereabouts. It was one of the first times I got into trouble with the, well, would it have been one of the first times? It was the first time ESL were really pissed off on me, I think. I ran a story. I got internal emails. And basically what they'd done is they told people in Counter-Strike, Source, the small babbies game that ESL neglected. So this is probably earlier. It might be even 2010, this story, actually, thinking about it then. ESL had said we would never put Source, a shit game, on our big circuit. And then, of course, they ended up doing it. But anyway, because Source was seen as the babbies game in the smaller scene, they told Source players that won the tournament, we can't pay you because we have a StarCraft II event coming up and we have to pay for the players to fly there and attend our event. Because StarCraft II was a different world. It was the biggest game in town back then. And so you won a tournament months ago and you get told to your face, you're in the hierarchy of where our money goes. You're down here, even though we promised you that money and you won that money because we've got to pay for a Korean StarCraft player to fly into Europe. Sorry, you just have to keep waiting. And I got those emails and I published them and ran a story on it. And ESL called up the Heaven Media office, talked directly to my boss, Mark, and said, is there anything we can do to get you to take that story down? It looks really bad. This is true. And Mark was like, oh, I don't know. Richard's a tough editor. You know, he likes to run stories like this. I could have a word with him. And Mark called me and I said to Mark, I mean, Mark, you know what the answer is, right? And he went, yeah, of course, I know that. And he told ESL, I've talked to him, and he says no. And it's his choice. And then he put the phone down. So ESL were fucking furious with me about that. So they were, I had ESL executives at that time come to me, and they would say things like, Richard, if you make us look bad, you make all of esports look bad. Sponsors might pull out. It's, you know, we've got to keep these things secret. We've got to work together. We've got a back channel. I'm like, I ain't got to do shit. I ain't going to do anything for you. Pay your fucking players. I know these guys. This is my scene. This is the scene I came up through. Pay these guys. It's fucking small. It's a pittance anyway. So in the end, they ended up paying. And so, but that should give you an idea of how it used to work back then. You had to fight tooth and nail for every single fucking penny because tournament organizers would run the event. They were all like fucking Kevin Costner in Field of Dreams. Like, oh, build it and they will come. And then sponsors wouldn't turn up. They wouldn't come. Nobody came at all. And so they would just be like, well, we've promised people prize money, but we've got no sponsors. I mean, again, just to give you another old war story, you know, this is going way, way back. This is 2005. I went to an event one year where it was called like EuroLAN or something. Or was it EuroLAN or EuroClash or something, EuroCup? I don't know. It was something generic and shit. And they basically hired a LAN center and said, we're going to get you, you pay for your tickets, you come over, we've hired the LAN center, this is the prize money, and you just come over. And it was going to be like one of the first times in Counter-Strike Source that people from Europe were going to play people from the UK. And, you know, we were going to get people from Finland. We had like Insignia Cadre there. And we were going to get, you know, people from Germany and, you know, people from Denmark and people from fucking, you know, the United Kingdom. We were all going to go to this LAN center. And anyway, we got there and we said, we're here for the tournament. And the LAN center said, what tournament? The big Counter-Strike Source tournament. We went, nobody's booked this venue. And the guy had took all of the money and ran, pocketed all of the entrance fees, all of the ticket sales, and just fucked off. And we were all there, dickheads, with our computers and that. And in the end, a guy called Gomez, he put it on his credit card and said how much to hire the venue for like 2 days or whatever, you know, and he swiped the card. And so we had a LAN like that, just for prestige. So people don't realize. By the way, we never finished it. There wasn't enough time. And I ended up, I think it was about 3-4 years later, that guy that did that snuck back into the Counter-Strike Source scene as a manager/owner of an organization. He changed his gaming name, but he went to an event and was like stood behind the team. And someone went, that's that cunt. It's that cunt that ran that fake LAN and robbed everybody. And I went, fucking hell, it is. We took photos of him and we were like comparing. And then I ran a story about him and what he'd done the first time and what he was doing this. And then obviously he was scamming again, wasn't he? So that was esports back then. That's just how that goes. So anyway, you'll understand why I'm telling you stories like this. in a moment. But the robbing Peter to pay Paul model is something that I thought was over, because it creates so many problems. Like, now when you go to a tournament, you get the money. You know, it's like they pay out pretty quick. And I'm not just talking as like teams. Teams obviously are the number one priority. How it works is usually the org will give you an account and they disseminate it to the players. And that's how that works, right? And so if it's a Valve thing, Valve have, like, for the sticker money, that goes direct to players, but generally prize money is disseminated through the organizations. And so you pay the organization the prize money, and that typically happens within, like, I want to say 7 to 10 days these days. They say on the thing, like, it can take 28 days, but no one's operating on that standard. And if you broadcast talent, you might operate on 28 days, but put it this way, there's companies I've worked for, MLG were one of them. They put a check in your hand at the end of the event that you would just go on cash. And PGL, pretty much every event, with the exception of Kazakhstan, they've paid me before the event finished, right? So I couldn't believe people were going to run an operation like this anymore, but they did. The bankruptcy was communicated internally on July 18th in a virtual town hall meeting, because this is how you fuck everyone over these days. You don't have a physical meeting. You just say, you come online on Zoom and you just go, all right, well, I'm keeping all the money and you can't get me. All right, bye. That's how that works. It was communicated internally on July 18th in a virtual town hall meeting, according to three people who were on the call. The company had often faced cash flow issues, and sometimes staff members would not get paid for 1 or even 2 months at a time. Whenever that happened, it was not Klaus Kajetsky, Yala's founder and CEO, but Timu Koski, the company's chief growth officer, who addressed the matter in internal meetings held twice every week and stood up for those who worked in the company. The justification was always the same, said a former staff member. We're having liquidity problems, and once the money from a sponsor comes through, we'll get you guys paid, and that will be our priority. Now, if any of you do go on to work in esports, whether you're watching in YouTube world or whether you're watching live, if you ever hear the phrase, we're waiting on sponsor money to come through, quit the job. Quit the job. Just walk away. Walk away from the horror. It's not going to be you are never going to have a steady paycheck in that job. That is not a sustainable business model. Sponsors can go bust all the time. So then what happens to you if you're the next fucking domino in the chain, right? Also, half the people in esports don't hit deliverables for sponsors. I have pulled that number out of my ass, but I think it's a pretty accurate estimate. There's a reason a lot of sponsors don't come back, because people say, oh, we can do 10,000 sales for you, no problem, 10,000, and then it's 400. And he's like, guys, this is fucking dog shit. So guess what? They withhold the money, or they don't pay, or they get into a contractual dispute. If the business model is contingent on the sponsor paying all of the money on time, and that's how you're going to get paid, walk away, because it will never work like that. It can never work like that. If they haven't got a slush fund or money in escrow or just a working functional business with a bank account that they can, you know, or maybe go into an overdraft with, it's over. It's over. It's, you know, I mean, again, to tell another esports horror story, I was working in a LAN center. It was the UK's biggest LAN center in Birmingham on Corporation Street. It's gone now. Right? It's called Amiga Sector. We had the CGS Combine there. Turned out it was being funded by some very dubious people from the Kazakhstan. From Kazakhstan, who were on like Interpol's fucking most wanted financial criminals list or something. And anyway, I knew we were in trouble, because one day I came into the office and it had two floors. And I walked up, and all of the people I knew, because I was more like an ambassador, I was in a real cushy role, you know. All of the people I worked with, all of the people that used to work the tills and work the bar and get people food and drink and do the IT, they were all hunched over, scratching off made in China. Scratching it off, all of the keyboards, all of the mice, all of the monitors. And I went, what the fuck's going on here? What are we doing here? And they were like, the Kazakhstanis want all of this equipment back, but if we send it back, you pay an import tax on things that were made in China, so we got to get rid of the Chinese stickers. So I was like, right, right then. Well, I'll be in my office not scratching stickers off things. Bye. And then they started paying us in cash. Our monthly salary was given to me in a brown envelope. Every month, out of a safe. There you go, Rich. The manager that ran that place was fucked. He'd had to take a mortgage out. He was sleeping in his car. So I was like, nah, it's time. That's how I ended up going back and working for fucking Birmingham City Council. Anyway, when the May and June salaries went unpaid, staff members thought it was just another bump in the road. Like many times before, this small team of nearly 10 people, including full-time employees based in Dubai and freelancers, supported each other through a difficult period. Everyone was very professional and understanding, said another former staff member who also spoke to HLTV on the condition of anonymity. And, you know, we've got to do what we got to do and understand we are facing difficult times. And as a company, as family, let's say, another red flag, guys, how many times have I got to see this? If you start thinking of your fucking workplace as family, two bad things are going to happen. First is the manager's going to exploit you because, oh, we're all a family. And second of all, you're going to be more susceptible to do things that aren't in your fucking job description and work a bunch of, you know, unpaid overtime because, but it's my family. I'll do anything for my family. It's not your family. They're not your friends. You might really like these people, but at the end of the day, it's a workplace. You got to fucking keep your eyes on the prize. And the prize is getting a regular fucking steady paycheck. During a company-wide meeting on July 10th, Kajetsky told everyone that a payment from a partner sufficient to cover at least the outstanding May salaries had finally come through. But as days passed without any updates, everyone began to fear the worst. Kajetsky began the July 18th meeting by going over the history of Yala since its inception. Uh-oh. Self-aggrandizing. It was a self-centered, emotional account that struck those who had worked under him all this time, some of them for years, as tone deaf. Everyone could relate to what he was going through, but what I take issue with is that it was all about him and that throughout his entire speech, there was not a single acknowledgement of the team around him who stuck by him and were owed money. There was no acknowledgement we were owed anything. It was almost as if he was telling us, sorry guys, we're shutting down. Good luck. And just in case you're wondering, there's the man. There's your Kajetsky. I mean, if I had to show... If I had to show people like what had gone wrong with esports these last few fucking years, this picture would say 1,000 words, wouldn't it? You've got Banks in Middle Eastern ceremonial attire interviewing a founder of an esports organization who's dressed like he's a player and also looks like he had a sustained period of time exposed to the One Ring. I don't know, like, it's just fucking, like, this can't be it. Like, this is why I don't want to talk about this shit anymore, man. You know what I mean? This guy, dressed like this, doing an interview with his own fucking event. That's also another tell. I've seen so many people do this. If the founder of the company comes out at a live event to talk about how much it means to them and what a big achievement it is, they're a narcissist. No one wants to hear from you. We just want to see the shooty, shooty, bang, bang, mate. I don't give a fuck if it's been a journey for you or how proud you are. Put it in your little fucking corporate fucking email and fuck off. Anyway, so that's the guy. That's Mr. Jetski. Another staff member added, I think it was very much an ego trip on Klaus's part. Like, I will go down with this ship. I'm the captain and I'll sink with it. But the reality is that he was not the only one. It sank with everyone on board. Everyone got screwed. Yeah, there were no fucking lifeboats for any of your employees. He was like that mad captain in Titanic who started shooting people. And turns out in real life he didn't do that and they just ruined his name for no reason. That's true, by the way. They just added that. They used the guy's real name and just had him shooting like women and kids. Like, ah! And it's like, in reality, he was a hero. Whatever. Kajetsky declined to answer questions and asked everyone to leave the call, stating that as the founder of the company, he wished to be the last to exit. He announced that the company was filing for liquidation and that all future communications would be handled through legal channels. As mentioned, We've made the difficult decision to begin the process of bankruptcy and formally wind down the company, he wrote in an internal email after the call. Despite every effort, we've reached a point where continuing operations is no longer viable. From here, the process will be handled by legal counsel. This includes how salaries, contracts, and other obligations are reviewed. As we're still early in the process, we don't have all the answers yet, but we'll share updates as soon as we're able. One of the former staff members who spoke to HLTV anonymously estimates Yala owes its personnel around 594,000 dirham, or the equivalent of $160,000. Keep in mind, they said it was a small team of 10 people. So everyone on that team owed 16 grand each, essentially, on average. Yala's staff attempted to schedule an online meeting with Kajetsky for July to receive updates on the bankruptcy process and figure out how they could submit their claims to the liquidator. Despite getting daily messages from his staff stressing the importance of the call, Kajetsky did not show up. The staff members went ahead and had the meeting to discuss their options. Kajetsky finally broke a long silence on August 1st, stating in an email that Yala's financial statements and documents were undergoing a final review. He named the liquidator entity in charge of Yala's insolvency process, which, according to him, has successfully guided many companies through similar processes. But to everyone's surprise, he insisted that claims be sent to Yala Esports email address rather than the liquidator itself. It was the same email address that we always sent our invoices to, the first former staff member said. It's a joke. For this freelancer and esports veteran with a decade of experience, this was the push he needed to exit the space and take his career in a different direction. I'm truly grateful and blessed for everything in my career, he said, but I think this was the last straw. Now, this is another thing they do, right? Because when you go in a bankruptcy, you know, it's not just you walk away. Right? You don't just walk away and say, well, that's it, guys. I'm bankrupt. No more money. See ya. What will happen is, and you usually get companies to do it, you liquidate. And what that process is, essentially, you look at all of your assets, you look at all of your monies, and then you look at all of the people you owe money to, and you create, essentially, a hierarchy of who's going to get what for as much money as can be salvaged from the company. You know, so for instance, you know, you've got 30 PCs, we'll auction the PCs off. How much money does that raise? You've got 30 high-level monitors, we'll find a buyer for that. You own some property, you know, whatever it might be. We liquidate it all, put the money in the middle, and then we sift through all of the applications. And by the way, in those applications, I'm not saying I've ever gone through a bankruptcy. I've never gone through a bankruptcy, never been declared bankrupt. I'm looking forward to that 15 years from now. But yeah, I've never been declared bankrupt, and I've never worked in the financial world. But as you know, did have a period of time where I was working in a debt collection department, and so you know, you touch on this stuff a little bit when people are declaring bankruptcy to get out of debt and stuff, and sometimes you do just get told you're not important enough to pay. Fuck y'all, that's that. No money for you. Other times you're told you're a priority, and you're getting your money. And you'll talk to the liquidator and, you know, on and on and on it goes. So for him to essentially not allow the staff to contact the liquidator, that's dodgy. Because what he could be doing, I'm not saying he is doing, but what he could be doing is prioritizing money that he claims he's owed, or prioritizing friends or whatever it might be. You know, if the liquidator's in, you're meant to just say to everybody, you talk to them. So very, very dubious indeed. Anyway, this goes right the way back to when they were an org, this part. And so obviously because they were an org that had teams, and then they start, and then they became a media company, and then they became a tournament operator. Obviously, at one point they used to have players. And they, you can see here, they had an Honor of Kings, I think it is, team. And they got sent prize money by Tencent. And the players have been chasing the money. You can see here, Abdesamad Ray Aloch, one of the players, and Sire were the only team members who agreed to the above terms to get their money as quickly as possible, which was they got less. they were basically getting 20% of the total prize. But then the organization missed this deadline. Everyone was like, why is he not sending us the money? Why is he ignoring us when he is promoting a tournament with a bunch of money? The manager recalled. When Yala dropped the Honor of Kings squad, the majority of the roster signed with Stalwart Esports, another United Arab Emirate-based organization. Tired of waiting to see their money, the players who had moved to Stalwart asked for the organization help in this process. The company CEO and founder, Zayn Shafiq, confirmed in a post on X. Contacted by HLTV, Shafiq stated that Stalwart utilized its local United Arab Emirate contacts to reach out to Yala and pressure them into paying. The matter was quickly settled, and the players on Stalwart received their full share of their prize money. According to SIA, head coach Tony was the last one to receive prize money. Abdo, Simjo, Khalid KC, Chaita, Quiet, and Feng remain unpaid to this day, and their messages to Kajetsky have been ignored since January 2024. And you can see here on this tweet, this is Abdo. It's been almost 2 years, still haven't received my money from the scammer called Klaus. He doesn't respond to us and doesn't care about us. He stole an estimated $250,000 and is doing projects and tournaments and doesn't want to pay us. So this is another example of why people need to do a better job of like speaking out about these topics. Because probably, if it was more public knowledge that this same guy had had issues paying prize money to players back when Yala was an org, maybe they don't get to be a media company. And maybe they don't get to be a tournament operator because maybe that person's reputation is ruined. And unfortunately, it's one of the things we don't do. Everyone is so in love with the idea of, if I just wait a bit more, I will get my money, I'll get my money, I'll get my money. They can never sort of let go of the idea of the money or realize that, look, if you speak out, it's still wrong if they don't pay you. It's like you're still entitled to the money. So it's just crazy that people do this. And it always has the knock-on effect that the people that robbed the money this time, they don't just stop because there's never any accountability. And probably some of that money might have just been used in turning it into the media company. Who knows? Who knows what happened? But I've seen this time and time again down the years as well, where prize money goes to the org, but then it never finds its way to the players. And the org, or the individual manager that's handling it, always says, oh, they bloody haven't sent it. And then the players go to the people and they go, we have sent it. And then you don't know who to believe. We got this going on in another esports organization at the moment, funnily enough. So keep an eye out for that one. Anyway, turns out they didn't pay the players yet from the tournament that they had. There you go. I mean, look at this. Kissing the trophy. Yay, we did it. The Mongols and Ninjas in Pyjamas, the two finalists to the 2024 event in Abu Dhabi, confirmed to HLTV they'd not received their share of the prize money. Yala had promised to pay half of the Mongols' $200,000 prize in September and the other half before the end of this year. Ninjas in Pyjamas were supposed to receive their $56,000 share back in October. This unfortunate development puts a damper on what was an otherwise watershed moment for the Mongolian team as it solidified their status as a rising force in the scene. Sources told HLTV that Yala invited the Mongols to attend the Compass event in Qatar before it was moved online. The Mongolian team turned down the invite on account of the lack of updates about the 2024 prize money and the trophy from the event, which they never even received. So they didn't even get this trophy, which is mental because it's there. It physically exists. The company is so incompetent, they couldn't handle sending the trophy out to somebody. And they didn't get any of the prize money. So another thing that teams will do, if you can believe it, certainly this was quite common back in the day, it's probably less common now. If a tournament organizer runs a tournament, you go, you win, you don't get the money, and then they run another one, you go to their tournament again. Why? Why would it do that? Oh, well, I went on a date with someone that roofied me, but before I passed out, we were having a pretty fly conversation. So we went on a second date. It's just ridiculous. Over the past 2 weeks, several other teams have confirmed to HLTV that they are owed prize money. Two of the most notable cases are Na'Vi Jr., who earned $75,000 through winning Yala Compass's Spring 2025. With the Na'Vi organization owed the same amount through the club share system, and BetBoom, who are owed $65,000, $55,000 in prize money, $10,000 in club share, from six Yala Compass tournaments, a stretch of time that goes back as far as December 2023. Other teams owed prize money include Complexity, Ents, Bomberclot, Partizan, Nexus, Namiga, 500, and GTZ. HLTV estimates that the total amount of unpaid prize money from eight Yala Compass tournaments could be as high as $700,000. It's mental that this is, they've ran not one tournament that didn't pay, but essentially eight tournaments. People are still owed money from all of this shit, and people are still just going to these tournaments. And Yala Compass was still just putting on tournaments and expecting to be recognised by Valve and getting VRS ranking points. Like, at what point do you... this is how you know it's a scam. This is how you know it's bullshit. Because you would just say, look, until we get the backlog settled, we can't run any more tournaments, because running tournaments costs money. You know, you look at your break-even on this shit. And clearly they weren't. I don't know if it's true if they pitched to get the major, but if they did, that's fucking wild. Also, now we get, right, so they fucked over their own staff internally to the tune of 160 grand in outstanding salaries. They fucked over all of those teams for all of that prize money, potentially to the tune of $700,000. What about the broadcast talent? Oh, well, you see, broadcast talent always gets it the worst. We're the luxury. We're the luxury. So what they do is they hire people. I mean, first of all, the money in like these tier 1.5, 2 events now is really bad for casters. Like, the freelance rates are fucking dog shit. And ultimately, in the hierarchy of who you fix, it goes like, we have to make the players right, because they're the ones that attend. We have to make the orgs right. So they're the priority always. Then your own staff. Then... I don't even know where broadcast talent is on the totem pole, but I know it's dog shit for a lot of tier two talent right now. And the money that they're already making is piss weak. And people are trying to, it's hard enough when you're a freelance broadcast talent working at this level. It's hard enough to even plan your calendar, because you don't know which jobs you're going to have. You don't know which tournaments there's going to be. You don't know how much money you're going to make. So you almost always have to have a side gig. And then sometimes the side gig just becomes the main gig, and then you have to turn down some work, and then people get pissed off about that. But it's not your fault. You got to pay your rent. I've seen it happen so many times. And so generally, whenever there's a bankruptcy proceeding, the freelance contractors that do the casting and whatever else, they get fucked over the hardest. And so you can see, HLTV knows that casters who work Yala Compass recent online tournaments are owed over $35,000. They were hired by Next Generation Esports, NGES, the production company in charge of those events, on behalf of Yala. But the production company is also owed a substantial amount by Yala. You've got Eternal J, friend of the stream. We love him. We see him in the chat sometimes. He said, I went through something similar with a company called EFRAG in 2018. That's the one with Dr. Revela. Oh, that takes me back. I went through something similar with a company called EFRAG in 2018, and I almost can't believe this still happens today. Yala promised big things, but it's clear they were unable or unwilling to execute their vision. I can understand running out of money, but what pisses me off the most is that seemingly they would willingly commission work that they could not procure. They owe casters for their last three events, suggesting that their financial issues have been ongoing since at least April or May. They made promise after promise, delay after delay, dragged us through the most opaque communication to the point that a few weeks ago, diplomacy failed. The money I will lose from Yala's outstanding invoices represents a significant portion of my income, large enough that I will need to reconsider some of my personal finances and budgets. Say what you want about this being a dream job, but I don't feel that I should be forced to go hungry for a video game. Yala could have represented the best of Tier 2 with online tournaments to provide a stepping stone to a greater event. but they failed spectacularly, and I hope that they, and anyone like them, never return to Counter-Strike. Eternal J added that freelancing for Tier 2 tournaments has become so unstable that in 2025, more than any other year, he is considered retiring. A lot of people share that sentiment right now. You know, there's a lot of people finding it hard. It's why I've always said it's super important to always have your own shit. Always have a stream, always have a website, always have a YouTube channel. Always have something you can channel energy into that's going to make you a little bit of scratch. Just so if the worst comes to the worst. Because it's a fucking viper's nest down there in Tier 2 anyway. Because there's so little work going around and so much uncertainty about it. People are undercutting each other and sliming each other and all this other shit. So, yeah, I imagine Eternal J isn't alone. I hope it doesn't come to it. But because we've got a lot of very good, solid, reliable talent that operate at that level. They might never get pulled into something like a Cologne. By the way, we call this foreshadowing. I'm setting up the next segment of the stream. You might not get to do with the big ones. You might never get a major. But in terms of like holding down an online broadcast, understanding how to stay energetic over long days, understanding how to fill dead air when there's production issues or players don't turn up, you know, being able to have your own home set up, ready to go. All of this is stuff that, like, this is why these guys exist, you know? It's like, it always pisses me off whenever you see, like, you see Jay and Dweg on the fucking B stream, and people go, couldn't you hire real people? It's like, boys, this is, what do you want them to do? Like, not exist. Like, so what happens then when you get bored of all the Tier 1 guys? Or what happens if the Tier 1 guys retire or get cancelled? Or what if they just want a break to, you know, spend time with their kids? It's like ridiculous. We need these people in the space. They're an essential component of the fucking machine. So I hope it doesn't come to that. Also goes on to say here, the cancellation of Yala Compass Qatar came as a heavy blow to Anati Productions, which is owed nearly $13,000. Anati is a German company that has been commissioned by NGES to be part of the production crew for the event, only to be informed a week before the tournament was scheduled to start that it had been moved to an online setting. Additionally, Anati had turned down other events because they clashed with the LAN in Qatar. So that's a double whammy. Tech Girl said she is fortunate enough to be in a position where the $2,000 she is owed won't have a massive impact on her finances, but she feels it's her duty to speak out for her fellow talent members who are facing a very difficult situation because they were reliant on the money they were supposed to receive for that work. Some people I've spoke to turned down opportunities to work on these Yala jobs. It's the impact that it has on someone who is very likely going to spend the next few months or has already spent the last few months living in debt, trying to just go, it's okay, the money is coming. But they've been put in a far worse situation than if there had been an honest conversation. I know this is so common in esports, and most people will just read this and carry on because it happens so often. I mean, I've been really lucky. This is the first time it's happened to me. I actually laughed because, like, oh, well, it was my time, you know? Reality caught up with Yala in April of 2025. The company had struck partnerships on the premise it would host a Tier 1 LAN in Qatar with some of the best teams in the world. What it delivered instead was a Tier 2 online competition with a single top 20 team that had a peak viewership of approximately 35,000 people, according to data from Esports Charts. Sources told HLTV that one expert in Yala agreed that $160,000 of the $250,000 sponsorship fee tied to the event would be paid back to the betting company. That debt has not yet been settled. So just to get into the level of fucking scammery Yala Esports is engaged in, they've even ripped off a gambling company. I mean, you gotta hand it to them in a way. They've gone big. They've gone big on that one. But this is what I was saying earlier, right? I say to you, I'm gonna deliver this. I don't deliver that. Can I still have the money? Well, no, of course you don't get the fucking money. But that you'd be amazed how often that goes on in esports, where people just don't deliver what they said they were going to deliver and think they're entitled to pocket the cash. Happens all the time at the MGOs. That's what they're doing. That's why a lot of these non-endemic sponsors just fuck off. They go, Jesus Christ, I worked with that one organization. They promised me this. Nothing came of it. I'm not wasting money there. There's better ways to spend money, better place. You know, you're better off with fucking, you know, Reddit ads or whatever it might be. A representative of another company that was partnered with Yalla, which did not wish to be named, said the amount owed by Yalla stands at 200,000 euros, stemming from incomplete deliverables. Like, where are we at now in terms of the ownership? We've gone north of a million for sure. The BetBoom representative, who spoke to HLTV, expressed concern for the health of the ecosystem that a tournament organizer that has pledged to run Tier 1 VRS events disappears overnight and leaves behind a long trail of unpaid debts. It's a pity that tournament organizers are facing these kinds of difficulties. It brings a lot of risk to the whole ecosystem because teams are not getting paid, tournaments are not getting delivered, and the organizers are going bankrupt. It's a risk for the industry to attract new sponsors because right now it mostly relies on betting companies. And we don't want this to be the case. We want the ecosystem to work independently so everyone can benefit from it. As the situation became more dire, Yalla decided to hire a new commercial director. This is really good. Hoping to find new partners that could help the company emerge from the financial hole into which it had been plunged. In other words, they thought, if we hire a sales guy, he'll go out and sell what a great product we are, because Yalla has such a great reputation and has done such great work that they'll pay us all of the money and we'll be able to just pay the $1.5 million in debt and everyone's prize money. Just mental. What a mental plan. He agreed to talk to HLTV about his turbulent stint with the company, though he did not wish to be named for the article. He began working with Yalla on May 1st at a time when it was already struggling to stay afloat. He explained he had been sold the picture of a sustainable business that was doing relatively well with two main sponsors, one of which pumped 1.5 million to 2 million into the company a year. He agreed with Yalla that he would be offered a relocation package worth a month's salary and booked an Airbnb in Dubai for 6 weeks. From the outset, he faced significant pressure to find new sponsors, but he knew it was par for the course. That's why he'd agreed on a commission-based compensation system with a big potential upside. It was only when he started on the job that he understood the gravity of the company's financial situation, including the debt to one expert because of the cancelled LAN in Qatar. As May turned to June, Yalla missed its first salary payment to him, citing the lack of an Emirates ID, which is a requirement to set up a local bank account, as the reason. I figured all of that out, he said. I finally got my bank account. It's now 6-7 weeks after I started. Again, more excuses. Oh, it hasn't worked out because there's a holiday and this and that. Just 8 weeks of constant excuses and back and forth. Just bullshit, really. And during the whole time, they're like, how are the deals going? How are the conversations going? To make matters worse, he learned that Yalla's bank account had been frozen because a former employee had sued the company. He kept pressing Yalla for updates about his salary as his Airbnb rental was coming to an end. I told them, I'm going to sign a long-term rental contract. I need some income. And they were like, it's fine. Just sign on. We're going to sort everything out next week. No problem. Imagine if this guy had actually just done that. Just moved to Dubai, signed a long-term lease. Because these guys are just gaslighting him and telling him everything's going to be okay. Mental. So I did that. Which is probably one of the biggest mistakes I've ever made. At some point, I should have realized this was not going anywhere. Alarm bells should have gone on, but they just kept, both of them, saying it was going to be fine. He learned about Yalla's bankruptcy like everyone else in the company-wide meeting on July 18th. On his last day in Dubai, he got an overdue rent notice under his door. He had until the end of the day to settle all outstanding amounts or he would be evicted from the apartment. He managed to terminate his long-term rental agreement 3 weeks into the contract, but had to pay a fee equivalent to 4 months' rent. He spent a total of $25,000 during his time in Dubai, even had to borrow money for living expenses. Additionally, he is owed $34,000 in unpaid salary. This is all thanks to Temu and Klaus and their complete mismanagement of the business. They lie to people, they make promises, and don't follow up on them. It's just pathetic. It's genuinely a complete Mickey Mouse circus show of how to run a business. It's not serious. One thing I'm super frustrated by is that they hired me knowing all this shit was going on. Why would anyone do that? Any normal person would never do that. Why would you put someone through that? If they knew they had no money, they should be like, well, we just won't hire any more people. It's just going to go under. We go down with the ship. To add more people to a sinking ship is crazy. Somehow, he's still able to find irony in all of this. He landed a sponsorship deal, just under six figures, for Yalla Compass. That fell through in the end when the bankruptcy was announced. I'm so glad that the partner didn't actually send us the money, because it could have been way worse, he said. I did my job. I overperformed, and I didn't get paid for any of the work I did. I think in their head, they were like, we're going to get this really good salesperson. We're going to get this really good guy, and he's going to save everyone. When in reality, so many things were going wrong. So they fucked over their own staff, fucked over about 10 organizations, most notably Mongols. They fucked over all of the freelance broadcast talent. They fucked this guy over, probably the most, arguably. They owe all this money to everyone and have just said, we're bankrupt. Deal with it. Then, just days before Yalla's bankruptcy was internally announced, management maintained a facade of normality. That is what esports is, isn't it? A facade of a normalcy. Despite over 2 months of unpaid salaries and mounting debts, Yalla attempted to run the closed qualifier for Contenders Season 2. When NGES demanded partial payment of the money owed to them, Yalla had no choice but to cancel the tournament. And you can see this was noticed online. What happened to Yalla Contenders 02? It was supposed to start yesterday, but it didn't begin. To this day, Kajetsky insists that all creditors should submit their claims to an email address belonging to Yalla. He has refused to provide documentation supporting his claim that Yalla is in liquidation, and the company he says is in charge of the process doesn't even list bankruptcy as one of the services it provides. I'm almost confident he hasn't done that, the commercial director said. I don't believe him for a second. The craziest part of this story is that he is claiming to do that, but I don't think he is. Amid the chaos at Yalla, Kajetsky has been sharing social media posts about one of his passions, crypto. He is part of Solana's United Arab Emirates super team, which supported last year's event in Abu Dhabi. Meanwhile, several sources have said that Koski is likely to join Nodwin Gaming, the company that acquired StarLadder at the start of this year. Neither Kajetsky nor Koski have made any public statements regarding the collapse of Yalla Compass or the company's liquidation process. For many of those affected by the company's financial mismanagement, speaking up is the only way to prevent others falling for victims. Kajetsky provided the following comment to us on July 23rd. We're not able to comment on the situation at this time, but we remain committed to communicating responsibly and with respect to our partners, teams, and fans. A full update will follow when the timing is right. There it is, guys. Just another fucking glorious day in esports. And those guys will likely be fine. I mean, for me, there's got to be enough in there. There had to be some sort of criminal charges you could probably think about filing. I mean, you know, certainly if there's nothing criminal there, there's more than enough grounds for a civil lawsuit. You have to do stuff to these people because, unfortunately, there has to be some consequences, you know, because ultimately they just walk away and they'll turn up again somewhere else, like a bad penny. It just happens over and over and over and over again. Meanwhile, the fucking web of broken lives that they leave behind, it's just unbelievably destructive to the fabric of esports, to the growth of esports, to the development of esports. And ultimately, remember, we're talking about people. It's not the industry that we should be worried about first and foremost. It's like the people. It's the people that have got to pay rent. It's the people that have moved house and are in long-term leases. It's the people whose careers might come to an end because ultimately this represented a lot of their income for the year. And now it's gone. It's gone and it's not being paid. I mean, this has happened, by the way, so many times down there in the tier two where people are waiting to get their money. And funnily enough, Vince, one of the Zomboid crew, he's gone through the same thing as well. And let me just get it. He was tweeting about this the other day. I mean, he's talked a lot about how hard, like, Tier 2 is and how it's been really, really rough. And it's sort of a good way to wrap up the topic. He said, a little while ago, I made a post commenting on the tier two scene and unpaid work many were going to have to take on the chin. For me, I'm owed €1,500, which, while significant to me, pales in comparison to some of the others. It seems it's merely a taste of what is to come. Bleak times ahead. Special thanks to Lewis Mira for this excellent piece and hard work he did on behalf of others. And look, it goes without saying, Lewis Mira has absolutely killed it. I mean, put it, he's probably, at a conservative guess, he's probably interviewed 20 to 25 people there to get the totality of the story. You're probably talking dozens of hours. I just know from, like, you know, like I said, I don't have the fire in the nuts for a story like that anymore. I've written too many of them, and I just, it's like, basically, my entire career is you just substitute the names of Kajetsky and Yalagumpus. And that's just the article I've been writing for 20 years. I don't know how Mira still has the drive, you know. But to Vince's point, it's really hard. It's really tough for the tier two guys right now. And it's bad enough that they're getting shit rates. But when those shit rates aren't even being paid, we're going to lose some people, man. People are going to pack up and like, you know, leave. And I know a lot of these people. Like, I'd like to, funnily enough, I'd like to, there's just no live component to it, so I can't fit in. But I'd like to do some of these events just so I could get to work with these people a bit more, you know, like Naokai and Veracity and, you know, obviously like Vince I've worked with before, but... You know, there's people. There are good. You know, there are good people out there in tier two that are like just nice people and fun, good at their jobs, and this is their entire livelihood. This is their entire life. I thought when we moved to VRS, I thought they were going to get a ton of work. There was going to be so many events, people would take breaks. But instead, what's happened is it's just become everyone, all the same names, pretty much throughout the year, and down in tier two in this boggy swamp. You just have the CCTs and that's the best of it. And they're paying like shit rates per map. And then you got the Yallas, they don't even pay. And they're gone now. And then you start worrying because, oh, don't worry, another one will come along. We got Fissure. Well, you know, how many times, like, are they going to be okay? Nobody knows. So, I don't know. It's another blow for the scene, but the impact of it could have been minimized if people had just come out on the first instance. Now, what we also need to do is, we needed some sort of fucking historical record about these fucking scammers and bullshit artists and these people that run these fucking failed companies and run esports companies into the ground. Because, like I said, they just get another job. They just walk away from, it's like cool guys walking away from explosions. We've got to make sure, you know, that these people aren't in a position to do this again. And that's very important for esports if it wants to maintain its status and allure. These things have wide-reaching ramifications, and they're not just financial. So, another one gone, Yala, RIP, 2023 to 2025.